the Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
Welcome back. Pack Right Low in for Mike Root on this Tuesday afternoon. Nice to have you along as we cover some topics and hopefully get a chance to talk with Kirk Bankstead from the Minocqua Brewing Company and the Minocqua Brewing Company Super Pack. He's got a very busy evening ahead of him fighting the old boys network of Minocqua, and he may be available to talk about this soon. We normally talk about that and many, many other things on Wednesday nights on the Up North podcast. It airs live on Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m., and then we turn it into a podcast that you can find in all the usual places, including the Devil Radio app on demand. And I believe it is still played back on Saturday late afternoons, if memory serves right. But of course, since I don't know, I should be looking at the Devil Radio website, and so should you. Then you'll find out when to find me and Kirk and Kristen Lyerly talking about things that that are going on. Amongst those things is a state Supreme Court decision that was handed down today. And the first thing, before we even tell you what it's about, I'm just going to tell you that it's noteworthy in that it is another instance where conservative justice Brian Hagedorn sided with the court's three progressive justices, and in a 4-3 split decision, said that the state, through the Department of Health Services, could in fact release data on COVID outbreaks in businesses, I believe, of 25 employees or more. Now, this is a case that's well over 2 years old now, because it was in those early weeks and months of the pandemic that one of the tools that would have helped, along with various safeguards and what have you, what would have helped is to know where there were outbreaks. It would mean that conditions perhaps weren't safe there, either safeguards weren't being paid attention to, people weren't social distancing, or whatever the case may be. It would have been an important tool for employees and customers to know where not to be at a time when essential workers were, thought of as national treasures to be protected. How quickly that seemed to change for some folks later on in the pandemic. Anyway, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and others in the commerce community brought this to court, saying that this was a matter of, medical data privacy when it did not involve personal data, personal information, and instead was simply business data that would have been helpful, again, for people as, the effort was being made to rein in the pandemic. It was a Waukesha County judge that initially blocked the release of the records. A state appeals court then reversed the lower court ruling, saying that Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce failed to show a justifiable reason for not releasing the records. It's simply one more reason why we can look back at this pandemic with such a sense of frustration, and the needless amount of deaths and infections that occurred because of the, it seemed, never-ending parade of ways in which people on one side of the political aisle, and especially on the big business side of the aisle, attacked the things that people were trying to do to save lives. This was a case brought in part by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which was looking into the data because in past stories, for example, they had shown that there was a reason you were seeing a big surge of cases in the meatpacking industry, because a lot of those meatpacking plants weren't looking out for worker safety. And there was other related stories that they did as well, because it seemed almost from the beginning that there were people that, they were not going to treat this with the seriousness that it required. I may have told the story before about a person close to us on the Republican side of things on that fateful St. Patrick's Day, when things really shut down here in 2020. And there were, reports that this thing could kill 50,000 Americans. And this person said, to us, "You don't really think it's going to kill 50,000 people, do you?" And my wife, a physician, said, I actually think it's going to kill 100,000 people or more. And as we were walking home, I said that was, you know, that was mighty interesting. You know, just coming right out and saying, you think this is going to kill 100,000 people. And she said, I think this is going to kill 200,000 people. This thing is deadly serious and we need to take it that way. Well, of course, people didn't. And here we sit with a million deaths and a case that has had to go for 2 years before getting to the Supreme Court. But it is, again, noteworthy as what I started with, that this is the Supreme Court that is, you know, on a knife's edge. It's got a 4-3 conservative majority. And there's plenty of times when Justice Hagedorn, puts up his conservative bona fides and goes along with the conservative justices, but not every time. And his presence on the court and his behavior on the court is really a metaphor for what we've seen in the Republican Party writ large, where you still have some, you know, mainline old school OG conservatives who are looking at, you know, the letter of the law, as opposed to what we've seen far too often in, you know, Republican and conservative circles. And that is, we're not really looking at the letter of the law anymore. We're looking at what we want to do and, you know, be able to make the rules ourselves. It's where we find ourselves with the January 6th committee that's going to be meeting on Thursday, and all of the shenanigans prior to that with contesting a fairly held election. One of my favorite headlines this week was in the Washington Post talking about the efforts of the Trump campaign to put up a slate of fake electors. The headline from yesterday's Washington Post says, "Fake Trump electors in Georgia told to shroud their plans in secrecy, according to an email." So of course they put it in an email, you know, to be secret about what they were doing in putting up this fraudulent slate of electors. It's the same thing that happened here in Wisconsin, where again you had a slate of phony electors, including a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who have been using the defense that, well, this was just a, you know, a just in case election irregularities were discovered. Bull. There were no irregularities.
Do you remember who facilitated them getting into the Capitol to go and sign all that stuff?
I was just getting to young Mr. Fitzgerald.
Great. His own election.
Yes. Scott Fitzgerald at the time was the Senate Majority Leader, the Republican leader of the Wisconsin State Senate, but was running for an open seat in Congress, won that seat in that November 2020 election, and could have just laid low and made plans to move to D.C. and be part of Congress. But no, he did facilitate that December gathering of fake electors in the state capitol on the same day that the real electors were meeting in state capitals all across the country. But in Wisconsin and in Georgia, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and some other states, a slate of fraudulent electors was meeting. Knowing that there had been no irregularities up to that point, again, this was not something spontaneous. The email trail is showing, the testimony trail is showing how the Trump campaign was organizing this, not as a what if, but until we're able to get into the halls of Congress on January 6th, when those electoral votes are being counted, and disrupt those proceedings in a parliamentary way by getting Vice President Mike Pence to say that, you know, due to irregularities that he would not be able to explain, but due to them, he was not going to recognize the electoral votes of this state, and this state. And as a result, either throw the election to the House or straight up declare that Donald Trump had won the election after you threw out the contested ballots. That was all part of the same plan. That's why it was no accident that there was a fake set of electors being put up in the Senate parlor in the Wisconsin State Capitol. with the assistance of Scott Fitzgerald. And the same thing was happening in Georgia, where a staffer warned them, "I must ask for your complete discretion in this process," wrote Robert Sinners, the campaign elections operation director for Georgia, as 16 Republicans gathered at the Capitol to sign certificates that declared themselves duly elected. Quote, "Your duties are imperative to ensure the end result, a win in Georgia for President Trump, but will be hampered unless we have complete secrecy and discretion." There is nothing in there that says, because the election was completely botched and fraudulent, we are putting things in place to be there as a just in case. There was nothing expressed about that. This was a straight up, we are going to put these pieces in place so that on January 6th, Donald Trump can be named president. That didn't happen. But what did happen on the 6th, especially after Mike Pence, with advance notice to President Trump, saying, "I can't do this. I'm not going to do this. I've even had Dan Quayle tell me not to do this." And who'd have thought Dan Quayle and Mike Pence would be the things standing between us and autocracy? But that's when you had other folks who had been, again, not gathering accidentally on the Capitol grounds on January 6th. This was a well-organized event by some people. And it's why you saw new charges filed against the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and others who helped foment the violence that took place on January 6th. And Lord only knows what it could have come down to had they been able to breach the chambers while members of Congress were in there and while the electoral votes were in there, the actual certificates that were sent from all of those state capitals. Because bear in mind, there were similar certificates that were sent to the National Archives as well by the fake Republican electors in Wisconsin and Georgia and Michigan and elsewhere. So again, I think that for all of the bluster since January 6th, folks don't fully appreciate two things: how we may have been minutes away from complete chaos if either members of Congress and or those electoral ballots had been, you know, seized. And I think folks will be surprised by the amount of planning that went into this and how far up the planning went. I guess I haven't seen it yet, but I understand that Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein have jointly written a new article in anticipation of the January 6th committee. And they write, in essence, "We thought Richard Nixon had established the definition of a corrupt president, and we were wrong." And it's been said plenty of times that what's happened here is far worse than Watergate. But at the time, there were only three networks. And so everybody was watching. You had to watch when John Dean said that he had warned Richard Nixon, I believe it was, if not one of the other officials, that there was a cancer growing on the presidency. Well, there's much more than a tumor here. It is more than a tumor that was growing from the Donald Trump campaign in terms of what could have happened on that January 6th day. So again, there are more than three networks now. And one of those networks is especially noteworthy, that Fox News Channel will not be broadcasting the proceedings live on Thursday night, but certainly will spin the hell out of them in the ensuing 24 hours and beyond to say, you know, ignore what you're hearing, ignore what you're seeing, that there's actually some kind of conspiracy going on here, just as they've been saying it since even before Election Day 2020. When there never has been. It was a straight up clean election. Joe Biden won, and this was a insurrection through and through. We'll be back with more after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow, in for Crute.
I think the White House could have handled this better.
The manufactured outrage by the Democrats right now is hilarious.
Watergate pales compared to what we're confronting now.
Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes?
Believe me. Believe me.